Wednesday nights, you might tune in to the Warm Heart of Africa to hear the funky, sinuous rhythms of Afrobeat. Or the pulse of Algerian rhyme music. Or the desert trance of Tuareg blues. Or township jive from Johannesburg. Or catchy soukous beats from the Congo. Those are just a few examples of what you might hear from 7 to 9 every Wednesday night right here on Valley Free Radio. Join me, your host, DJ Vinyl Scratch, on the Warm Heart of Africa, a celebration of African and Afro-diaspora music, culture, and history, delivered with a groove.
It's 4:01 according to the studio clock. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Also in the studio with me today is Dwayne Rainey.
Sniffles the clown.
Thanks for tuning in. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5. I describe the show as explorations in neighborhood living. But before I get into today's show, I wanted to share a little story, a Northampton story. I was riding my bike on Monday doing some deliveries, and I was coming up North Main Street towards the stoplight there by Birds and Cup and Top. I was on the right side of the road, and I was trying to get in the left turn only lane, and the light was red, and there was a line of cars that were coming up to a stop. And I looked over my left shoulder, and I saw there was a little gap, and so I tried to squeeze through the gap to cross through the lanes. And I let my left hand off the handlebars to give a little left turn signal. And then when I tried to put my hand back, my winter gloves got tangled up and the brake levers and stuff. And I actually ended up sort of stumbling to a stop against the rear hood of the car that was stopped at the stoplight, which happened to be the gray car that belongs to Jeff. Sorry, I don't know his last name, but it's this gray car that's got paint and stuff all over it and the peace sign on it. And so after looking over my shoulder at the car behind me and giving a sort of embarrassed kind of look, I waddled my bike up to by Jeff's driver's side window. And I was like, sorry about that. And he was like, oh, no, that's cool. It's just like you blessed it. You can touch my car anytime. So that's a good car to run into. Thanks, Jeff. So today we're going to talk about the desire to buy and the pressure to buy, especially during the holiday season. And we'll talk about some of the environmental and social impacts and about other ways to approach life. I've got some clips from a dumpster diving run that I did last week on Thanksgiving and an interview with Ruthie Oland of Equal Exchange and a few songs. And also, who knows what Dwayne might like to share. Also last week on Thanksgiving, I went to the manna meal at Edwards Church, and it was really nice. It was a really nice community meal, and I'm really grateful for everyone that was involved in putting that on, and I felt really welcomed. I really appreciate how it's a community meal and not just like the meal for poor people. I think part of me felt a little bit uncomfortable, like, do people think I'm just, like, taking advantage of it? But then I thought, no, my gift is to be here and to be present and to just
bless everybody.
And be blessed.
Besides cars.
All right, here's a song. Oh, no, it's not playing.
Well, speaking of meals, there's an annual holiday dinner at the Northampton Senior Center for non-residents. The Northampton Council on Aging and Senior Center's annual holiday dinner will be held on Sunday, December 7th from 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. Tickets will be sold on a first-come, first-served basis. It's put on by, the Northampton Senior Center is located at 67 Conn Street in Northampton.
There's another announcement that I wonder, Dwayne, if you could read about the Troy Exchange coming up. This is very related to today's topic. Here's one way that you can reduce your Christmas consumption and still get the goods.
Toy Story 4, the 4th Annual Toy Exchange. Northampton Reuse 4th Annual Holiday Toy Exchange will be held on December 12th and 13th in 2014 at Smith Vocational High School in 80 Locust Street, Northampton. Donations of gently used toys will be collected and shared free of charge. This highly anticipated community event has become an important source of holiday gifts for residents on tight budgets. It also increases the lifespan of toys and other durable items, which are often discarded long before their usefulness wanes. Donations of clean, gently used, working toys and sports equipment will be accepted from the public from 5 to 8 on Friday, December 12th, and from 8 till 9 a.m. on Saturday, December 13th. The following items are sought: musical instruments, action figures, sports equipment, bicycles, books, games, puzzles, model kits and building toys, arts and crafts, creative learning toys, cars and trucks, oh boy, outdoor toys, structures, stuffed animals, electronic toys, video games, and DVDs, and babies and preschool toys.
Babies?
And baby. No babies. Baby.
Oh, baby toys.
Yes. Okay. Collected toys will be available to donor parents and those referred to a prearranged community agencies on Saturdays, 12-13 from 9 to 10. And to the general public from 10 till noon. Participants are asked to leave children safely at home in the care of others during the Saturday pickup portion of the event. This event is intended to provide free toys to local children for their personal use. We ask resellers to respect that goal. At the close of the event, all remaining items will be donated for reuse and recycling. See. Little service thing here. It says the average U.S. citizen consumes twice as many goods as 50 years ago, and over 90% of the goods produced in the U.S. markets find their way into the trash within 6 months. So give them a box to play with, and they'll be happy.
Yeah, that was the real reason I wanted you to read that announcement, was the last statistic.
You could have just told me.
Well, but so the average, say that again, the average consumer item?
It says, the average U.S. citizen consumes twice as many goods as 50 years ago, and over 90% of goods produced for U.S. markets find their way into the trash within 6 months.
Yeah, being a trash hauler, I think it's made pretty clear to me that pretty much everything that comes in the door from the store is going to end up being thrown away, except for perhaps a few things like food, books, and scrap metal. It's just important to think about the whole cradle-to-grave kind of system. There's lots of good books and information about that. Couldn't get the song. I wanted it on the computer. But here's a little thing that my dad, Jim Woodring, wrote, read by my housemate, Ben.
Plastic Rocks by Jim Woodring. I hope the wonderful title of this story did not mislead you. Wild music and credit cards do not enter into this little educational adventure, into this school story. At the middle school, the science teacher wanted to conduct a simple, hands-on experiment. She said, "Today, class, we are going to start an experiment with rocks. We want to find out if rocks have feelings." That cracked up most of the students. They had immediate questions that they voiced to the walls. "This lady must be kidding. Rocks with feelings? Emotions like love, hate, anger, fear, pain, depression?" The teacher waited for things to quiet down and gave them their assignment. "For tomorrow's class, each one of you is to bring a rock with you. Make it about the size of a plum or tangerine, but no bigger than a tennis ball. You don't want it too big because it will be sitting on your desk." And so it happened. Some forgot, some brought 3 or 4 rocks, some were too small, some too large, but all the students finally placed their personal rocks in places of honor on their desks. The teacher said, "Rocks are like people. No two one of them are the same. Each one is different with individual characteristics, different edges, colors, and shapes. Look at your rock carefully and note all the unique things about it. Play with it. Pat it on the head. Talk to it. Listen to it. The silliness and self-consciousness wore off after 2 weeks. The students named their rocks and treated them like pets. Ah, but this is school where things happen. Two boys got into it, and one of them grabbed the first thing that came to his hand and threw it. Bullseye, it hit right on the other boy's head. That pet took a big bite out of his scalp. It took 8 stitches to close it up in the emergency room. The highly upset teacher started to reprimand the boy, but he knew how to play the rock game. He picked up his bloody rock and said, "Oh, my poor pet, are you hurt? I'm sorry I gave you such a nasty hit on George's head. Will you forgive me, dear rock?" He patted the rock, cradled it in his hands, and sang a little song to it. "Rock-a-bye, baby." The teacher exploded. "What are you doing? Who do you think you're fooling? Go apologize to George for hitting him and stop the fighting." The student said in mock sadness, "Oh, now you have hurt my rock's feelings. I'm only performing the assignment you gave us. See how its edges are starting to droop." We have to leave the teacher to her consternation for now, but another student caught most of the action on her cell phone and put it on YouTube. As the saying goes, it went viral. Soon every kid in the nation wanted a pet rock. It gets crazier. Soon you could buy pet rocks in designer styles and colors. They did not even have to go out and pick up a dirty one, and real rocks were too dangerous for schools. Imitation rocks made in China of cheap plastic flooded the malls. And the science experiment, how did it turn out? It was a success. Pet plastic rocks came to have a personality all their own.
That was my housemate Ben reading a piece that my dad, Jim Woodring, wrote. This is out there on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, Northampton, 103.3 FM, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. That piece by my dad makes me think about how do we learn what things are worth, and how are these values passed on in a culture? It seems like the elders have been overshadowed by the sellers. One symbol that something has no worth is that we put it in the trash. We say we don't want it anymore. Or if it's a store, they say they can't sell it anymore. It loses its cash value, but its inherent worth. Instead of worth, maybe we should talk about usefulness. Like a blue sock, a blue wool sock and a red wool sock are just as useful as 2 red socks, but I've seen them thrown out. I mean, where did we learn to devalue useful things? Or like an apple with a rotten spot on it? Cut out the spot and the apple's 100% good. I think it's up to thinking individuals to be trendsetters and display new ways of valuing things based on their usefulness. Or another thing I think of is like broccoli stems. Are they so different from kohlrabi? It's all good.
Well, I think that your 100% value on apple is probably about 90% after you cut the rotten spot out.
But if the rotten spot's gone, what's remaining is 100% good, except for the core, maybe. Anyway, I don't know who invented the demoralizing phrase that a person is worth so much money, but please don't repeat that. It's a continuation of slavery mentality. Now I have a little clip from my dumpster diving trip last Thursday. It's Thanksgiving Day. The snow is falling off the trees. My neighbor's snow blowing. It's a good morning to go dumpster diving. I'm looking for food because food is precious. I hate to see people throw away food. Even just like when people are cracking an egg, the whites that are left inside the shell, unless you scrape it out with your finger. All that stuff's precious to me, especially protein, high-quality protein. That's good as gold, or better, because you can eat it. There's a lot of food thrown away on Thanksgiving. It's kind of a holiday of excess often. We want to make sure that everyone's got plenty to eat. But if you work in a shelter or soup kitchen, often you're flooded with donations and help on that day. It's good to spread out the love throughout the year. The Northampton Rail Trail is plowed.
The city plowed it promptly after enduring yesterday's snowstorm. But I'm going to Hadley. I'll ride about 9 after I get to the Connecticut River. But the bike path is beautiful, winter wonderland. The snow shining on the icicles and things hanging on the trees. Another thing about dumpster diving in Hadley on holidays is that Route 9 is a relatively pleasant road to ride on with the less traffic. There was a snowplow in front of the dumpster, the main dumpster I was after. Bummer. Oh well, so I've come to a secondary dumpster. Well, not really secondary, but I've come to another one. There's some snow in here. There's lots of bread products I could bring home for the ducks and chickens. Ooh. Here's a 46-ounce jar of unsweetened apple sauce. Unopened. Expiration date, February 25th, 2016. Oh, it's too fresh for me. Here's a bag of apples, but it was sitting in the bottom. I'm not touching that. What else? Scallions, zucchini, Pringles. Who likes Pringles? Not that. Milk. Instant bake jumbo buttermilk biscuits. I got standards. Ingredients. White flour, water, palm, soybean or cottonseed oil, blah blah, potassium chloride, artificial flavor, potassium sorbate. Not fast. I can afford to be picky because I live in the land of plenty and luxury. Oh, bananas. Now that's what I'm talking about. Pretty much only eat bananas if I dumpster them. I don't like the whole banana plantation situation. Neufchâtel cheese. Maybe not. Crispy oats. You know, like Cheerios. Brand name. Box cereal. That is something else I would eat if I dumpstered. Oh, and a pineapple. I missed that almost on top. Here's the bag that's heavy. Oh my gosh. Oh baby. Holy pasmoli. Mixed nuts. Cashews, almonds, Brazil nuts, hazelnuts, pecans. There's a 30-ounce jar of mixed nuts. Oh my gosh. Expires October 2015. By the way, it's November 2014. Oh, that's what I came for. I thought the other dumpster was the one I wanted. But no, baby. If I can find nuts, this is the spot. Chopped walnuts. Oh, and a whole case of leftover Halloween candy. Maybe I'll keep that for next year. That stuff doesn't go bad. Shoot, sorry, Dad. But could I safeguard it till next year and not hurt myself with it? Bottled water. Bottled water is often good for washing your hands off after you've been in the dumpster. Or if you're really hungry, you can wash off that apple or whatever. New York State apples. Macintosh. I'll take it. Blackberries from Mexico. Nah, pass. Ground beef. All this stuff is here cold in the snow, packed in snow. If I ate industrial meat, I'd take that. Maybe. Nah, maybe not. Alright, what else we got? Salsa? Sure. It is Thanksgiving. And a votive candle, Our Lady of Guadalupe. Our Lady of Guadalupe. Dear Virgin of Guadalupe, mother and help of all Christians, since you appeared to Juan Diego in the mountains of Mexico, the problems that torment me I place in your blessed hands. Remember, O blessed mother, that never has it been known that anyone who sought your help was left unaided. With confidence, humble and repentant, full of love and hope, this favor I implore. Amen. Mention, petition, and pray a Hail Mary. A product of Bright Glow Candle, made in USA. How am I going to get all this stuff back on my bicycle? This is going to be impossible. I'm going to have to choose wisely. Choose wisely and pack and stack strategically. And ride carefully. The first thing I'll pack is the nuts. Because if I get kicked out of here, I at least want to have made it away with the nuts. Then I'll pack the heavier things at the bottom and work my way up. Fill both panniers and strap a box of the lightest stuff on my rack. And if I have more, I can tie a couple bags on the handlebars. Alright, I'm all strapped on. As I pack the stuff, I'm thinking about which friends or housemates might like which things. There's such excess. You gotta have a plan. When you take something, you gotta have a plan with where it's gonna go. Because there's way more than I could use.
So I'm riding down Route 9 in Hadley between Middle Street and West Street. And just one cyclist to know, if they don't already, which they may know thanks to Eli Damon, they're taking the lane. It's typically the safest place to be on this road. Because if you over to the right, then two motorists may try and pass you at the same time, side by side, squeezing you. But if you take the right lane, it gives a clear symbol to motorists, clear sign to motorists that they need to get into the other lane to pass you. And if you're a motorist and you see a cyclist taking the lane, it typically means that you need to wait until there's time to go around them, and they're there because the lane is too narrow for a cyclist and motorist to share. Often there's debris on the right side of the road, like in this stretch here from West Street to Bay Road. There's a narrow shoulder, maybe 3 feet, and it's often filled with debris. Now it's got snow in it, plus there's sewer grates. So I'm in the middle of the right lane. Because if I go over there on the other side of the white line, I'll end up swerving in and out around debris. There's some branches down from trees, lost branches, snow, snowballs. So if I stay in the right lane in the middle of it, I'm very visible, I'm predictable. There's a whole other lane for motorists to pass me. And this seems like the safest way to share. All right, that was a clip from a dumpster diving trip I took last week. Dumpster diving for me usually involves some bike riding. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I just wanted to recognize that I come from a place of white middle class privilege where my parents have always loved me for who I am and have never put pressure on me or my 7 siblings to make money or have a certain image. One of the best gifts my parents gave me growing up was not having a TV. My dad always called it the evil eye. I saw a bumper sticker recently that said, "Why worry about Big Brother watching you when you're busy watching him?" So turn your eyes away from the racks of beauty magazines and the billboards and the beautiful people movies. They're just going to leave you feeling like you don't measure up. Anyway, I just want to recognize that it's easier for me to reject superficial values when I come from a place of economic stability and family support and fitting in many other ways. So we've been talking about consumerism and materialism and I don't know what we've been talking about, but there's another song I wanted to play. I'm going to have an interview with Ruthie Oland from Equal Exchange soon. I wanted to play a song about items that are made in the USA, and made in the USA is good, but not the answer to, they're still having their problems environmentally or whatever. Anyway, here's Warren Zevon.
Another one due.
That was Warren Zevon. Next we'll have next we're going to have Dwayne talk. Say something, Dwayne. I don't know where my clip went.
Okay, something. Let's see here. What do you got?
Here, announce the ski and skate sale. That's a way to reduce trash.
Ski sale, man. I guess I am. Smith's Vocational and Agricultural High School. See, Saturday, December 6th from 9 till 2. Ski and skate sale. Donated and consigned items will be gratefully accepted at Smith Vocational and Agricultural High School on Friday, December 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. Proceeds will provide educational scholarships to graduating seniors from Smith Vocational and will help fund local and other Lions Club charities. So it's put on by the Lions Club. That's Friday, December 5th at Smith Vocational High School.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to turn your microphone on.
Okay.
Here, just make the very brief one sentence announcement if you can condense that.
Ski and skate sale, Friday at Smith Vocational Agricultural High School.
Is the collection?
It's donated and consigned items will be gratefully accepted at Smith Vocational and Agricultural High School. Proceeds will benefit educational scholarships for two graduating seniors from Smith Voc. And will help fund local and other Lions Club charities. Is put on by the Lions
Wait,
Club.
Wait, so that's Friday, but then the actual, when you come and buy, isn't that on
Saturday?
Saturday, December 6th.
So they take the stuff on the 5th and they sell it. See, check, cash, Visa, or MasterCard are accepted.
All right. So next I have an interview with Ruthie Olin from Equal Exchange. So this being the holiday season for many people. If you're into the gift giving or just buying things in general, here's some things to think about.
My name is Ruthie Oland, and I am the school fundraising program coordinator at Equal Exchange. And our headquarters are based here in Massachusetts, just about 2 hours away in the town called West Bridgewater, which is about 2 hours... about 45 minutes south of Boston.
But you live here in Western Massachusetts.
I do. I just bought a house. I live in Haydenville, and I've been in the area for about 10 years.
Could you say something like about Equal Exchange, what it is, what it does, how it's organized?
Well, Equal Exchange is a worker-owned cooperative, and we import organic and fair trade natural foods products from small-scale farmer cooperatives around the world, and we wholesale those primarily to stores and cafes, but also to congregations and schools, and we also have a retail web store and a couple of cafes as well.
What is fair trade, and why is it important?
So fair trade is system. Well, you know, I think before I get into really what fair trade is, it's helpful to maybe go back and just understand how Equal Exchange started. It's Equal Exchange was founded in 1986 by a couple guys who were working in a New England food co-op, and they were really aware of this great movement of getting to know the farmers and getting to understand where our food comes from. And in particular, they were very lucky to be able to do that here in New England, where there were small farms that were around the cities in which people live in the Northeast, and people got to understand the plight of farmers and how difficult it was. And so by having a farmer's market, we were able to get to know farmers, support farmers directly. And these three guys in the Boston area were thinking about farmers who were in much further away places, much, much more marginalized farmers, and who didn't have access to communication, to markets, to capital, to loans, and whose plight maybe was much more extreme and worse off, and who we could never know easily, at least, and couldn't help them. And so this was, of course, products like that we use all the time, like coffee and sugar and tea and cocoa. And so they met for a year, and they actually brought this idea of kind of working directly with these small farmers, you know, kind of using this, you know, local model of getting to know your farmers and kind of the work that had already been going on in Europe to this idea called fair trade, where you actually have direct relationships with the very people who are growing these items, what we kind of call commodity crops usually in this country, getting to know them and having a direct relationship so that you can understand how things are grown and the plight of the farmers and kind of mutually support each other.
Mm-hmm. So Equal Exchange imports these products and resells them. Could you say anything about like the fair trade certification process or why that's important?
Sure. So basically, you know, when Equal Exchange brought, you know, was formed in 1986, it was the first fair trade food company in the United States. And it was so it was before there was any certification in the United States. And so it was at 10,000 villages was also at that time as for crafts. And there were some other fair traders who went abroad and met farmers and were trying to help people. And there this movement kind of started. And it was only after that that a system of certification was formed. But I guess what I wanted to say was that each commodity, if you will, each crop like has sort of a different system of kind of the standards of fair trade. But let's just focus maybe on coffee, which is, of course, what Equal Exchange is maybe best known for. So for coffee, what's still true today is that you have to be organized in a cooperative to have fair trade certified coffee.
The growers.
The growers, exactly. So what that means is that farmers collectively own land together and they sell their coffee to the cooperative, and the cooperative kind of garners power as a group and can leverage that power to get a certain price, whereas an individual farmer would be much more vulnerable and marginalized, and it would be much harder to get a fair price for their crop. So by working in a cooperative, they can leverage that. It also makes it easier for buyers and certifiers to be able to certify farming practices, labor practices, and things like that. It helps farmers be able to export by having a lot of people doing it together so they can pool resources and things like that. So they sell their product to the cooperative. And in the fair trade system, when you're buying fair trade coffee, let's say, a fair trade buyer would pay the cooperative for the goods and also a fair trade premium. So that's like maybe, I'm not sure how much exactly that might be. Maybe if it's 10 cents a pound or something like that on coffee, and that gets pooled. And then the cooperative gets to decide what happens with that money. And each cooperative has, it makes a different decision. Sometimes they distribute it. Sometimes they build a school or invest in women or community groups or healthcare, clean water, things like that. But part of the system is that there's, you know, labor practices where children are not allowed to be working, and you have to have clean sanitation and things like that on farms and labor laws. So that's part of the system. And then so somebody from Equal Exchange has a relationship with the cooperative and buys directly from the farmers and really gets to know what's going on in those farms. And so one of the great things about this relationship, which is so special, is that farmers who very often have very little, and it's just through like a thread that they're able to hang on to their land and whatnot. When something bad happens, like a natural disaster, if you are just in a normal kind of normal business relationship, right, in capitalism, something bad happens and it's kind of like, oh, well, we'll just go on to the next farm that didn't get hit or whatever. But a partnership we're committed to in fair trade, the idea is that we're committed to long-term relationships. So that means that when something bad happens and trees get destroyed or there's a disease that's killing off a lot of coffee plants called La Roya or leaf rust disease, we show up with a check to help aid that situation.
So for the North American consumer or the United States consumer who's just looking at coffee prices on the shelf, how does fair trade coffee, if you just look at that dollar figure on the shelf, how does that compare with, generic coffee or other coffee?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think it really depends. I mean, for one, almost all fair trade coffee, to my knowledge, is called, I believe it's called Arabica coffee, right? It's like a higher quality specialty coffee that has a lot of desirable qualities that cafes like and people who like high coffee culture are really enjoy. And so that's going to have an extra premium with it. Then you're going to have a premium for organic with a lot of fair trade, but not all fair trade coffee is organic. Equal Exchange sells about 95% of our coffee is organic. So there's going to be those differences. Yeah, and then it's also going to vary on the quality. For example, at Equal Exchange, we test and rate all of the coffee that comes into our warehouse when the farmers send us green bean samples, and we roast them and test them and rate them. And this is happening in coffee companies all over the world. And so different flavor profiles, different heights in which a coffee is grown has a different price to it. So, and the other part that maybe you're interested in, right, is how does the premiums for growing organically or for having it be fair trade, for having it be higher quality coffee, how does that translate to farmers? And the answer is it varies. You have a different cost of living, different standard of living in Honduras versus Mexico versus Peru versus Bolivia. And some farmers are doing what looks like okay, and some aren't. And it's just different in each place in terms of what you can get for the same amount of money and whatnot. So you have that as well. But overall, and I got to go to visit a cooperative in El Salvador 2 years ago, Las Colinas Cooperative. And the farmers were just so grateful for the relationship with Equal Exchange and Fair Trade, and conveyed, yes, by far, even though they have very simple lives and maybe they don't have enough for all the basic things that we would like to think that everybody should have, that they were very convinced that fair trade was a good thing and they were very grateful for it.
I guess I have a sense that the average United States consumer of coffee goes and buys it as a regular part of their routine. It seems like it's fairly cheap for someone from the United States to buy a cup of coffee. How do you convince people that it's worthwhile to pay a little more for something that's not even a necessity?
Yeah.
I mean, it is a necessity at this point for many people. But
yeah, it's really interesting. You know, when you go to the country and you see the coffee trees, from baby coffee trees, and the farmers planting the trees, nurturing the trees, fertilizing the trees, taking care of the trees, ripening, you know, looking at the cherries ripen and how the farmers pick the cherry and then have to go through this whole elaborate process of depulping the outer part of the coffee cherry and then drying the coffee beans and then gathering them up and putting them in these sacks and bringing them to maybe the storage area, and just all the intense amount of work that goes into it. And then people in the United States talk about price and how much things cost. And you just say, like, wow, like, this is nuts. Like, people's work is really devalued, especially we don't understand what all the work that goes into it. So I think that's an important part of considering when you're shopping for fair trade products or deciding to do it or to not do it. And the other thing that's helpful, I think, to think about when you're purchasing fair trade products is that, you know, I'm just going to touch on this a little bit, but there's controversy in fair trade today in the certification system. So when a certifier was was started through the efforts of this movement of people who had been really excited about bringing fair trade to the United States, it was called Transfair, and it was really exciting because we wanted to be certified. We wanted a third party. We didn't want people to, you know, just say, like, take our word for it. We wanted somebody else to come in and certify fair trade providers. And what happened was there were some competing values. The way that the certifier was paid was through like how much was certified. Basically, they would be paid and then they would market kind of the fair trade products. That was part of it. And so there was, I guess, more and more interest in the certification organization to have corporations and bigger corporations be fair trade certified, even if it wasn't, you know, even if it wasn't as strict fair trade as we would have liked, or authentic fair trade. And it's been tough, especially a few years ago, Transfair took the name Fair Trade USA, and it's really confused consumers. It's like, well, what is fair trade and what isn't fair trade? And you're just shopping in a store and you're trying to make a good choice and a ethical choice when you're shopping, and it's become really confusing. One of the things that they were doing at the time, and I think that they may have been reversing this now, but was saying that something is fair trade if it has only 20% ingredients in it that are fair trade. And to a lot of us who, you know, have been involved in this movement for a long time, that didn't feel right. And it feels like it's just kind of like washing the certification. And yeah, so it's something tricky. But what I would say is that, you know, there's certain organizations that are 100% committed to fair trade, and those are the ones that I would say are better bet. I feel really excellently about Equal Exchange. Plus, it's a worker-owned cooperative, but also 10,000 Villages, which has been doing this work since the 80s.
Has a store in downtown Northampton.
That's right. Dr. Bronner's and Maggie's Organic, I know, are also organizations that have been in this fight to kind of reclaim this authentic fair trade. And I think if you probably search the term authentic fair trade, they'll probably come up with some other good companies and organizations that are good to buy from.
That term's not trademarked.
That's a great point. I hope not.
So how would you balance buying fair trade products from another part of the world versus buying local?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for things that are made locally, that it's great. I personally like to buy things that are I can get locally, because that has to also like involves, you know, shipping things and carbon emissions and things like that. So if I can get it local, I feel good about that. A lot of the things, like I mentioned, are products that don't grow locally, like coffee and tea and sugar and whatnot. But yeah, I think I think they're both good choices, basically, in my mind. It's kind of like, I think we created a bumper sticker a few years ago, like, buy local, buy fair, support small farmers everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of good. You know, when you shop at a store, maybe it's a local store, right? And you're like all about supporting your local economy. But that product actually that you might buy from that store isn't actually made locally and might come from some really awful, you know, factory somewhere where there's really bad labor practices. And, you know, we're trying to balance all of these things. And I have compassion for people who want to make the right purchase everywhere. I can really relate to that.
So Ruth, could you tell me a little more specifically about what the program you're working on with Equal Exchange now?
Sure. So I work on this really cool program. It's actually a very, very small part of what Equal Exchange does, but I think it's a really important part. And what we do is we offer a catalog fundraising program for schools and groups that are looking to raise money. And we have a catalog, and it's filled with organic and fair trade products, maybe 60-75% are food products, and then there's a whole gift selection of products from 10,000 Villages, actually. There's gift boxes from Equal Exchange. There's organic and fair trade chocolate, coffee, tea, cocoa, olive oil, as well as really beautiful jewelry items, scarves. And actually, we sell gift wrap that's made from recycled cottons from the garment industry in India. Handmade, beautiful, hand-printed. It feels really thick and very special. And those are some great ideas for gifts.
That reminds me, the gift wrap reminds me about your chocolate wrapper, your new chocolate wrapper, which looks like silvery, plasticky foil, but it's compostable and easily compostable in our backyard compost pile. It's broken down in a, in no time.
That's great to hear, Ruthie. Yeah, in I believe it's now probably it's something like 75 or 80% of the bars have that wrapper. A couple of them actually do have the tinfoil, but I'm just so proud of my organization. They're just really committed to making things more sustainable, and so when we come across a better package, for example, we just came out with a single serve coffee cup that can be used with the Keurig machines. And it's recyclable, and yeah, it's like when we weren't willing to come out with a product like that until we could find something that would be better. So that's pretty exciting.
Cool. Thanks for what you do on Equal Exchange. So if people are trying to be more local, buy more local products, but at the same time, people, like there's a real like cultural phenomenon of an addiction to coffee, like would it be better to trade in the addiction for something you can grow locally, more like, you know, you can get nicotine from Hadley or you know, pot, or should people trade in their drug for a more local one?
That is a great question, Ruthie, and I think I'll be thinking about that for weeks now. But I guess my thought is, you know, maybe there's something else local that would be a better substitute for an addiction to coffee. For example, dancing. I know that like I'm part of the dance community in Northampton, and it's a tobacco and alcohol-free space. It's also a shoe-free space, and it just mm-hmm. it's a great place to get wild and crazy, and with a bunch of other people who are also getting wild and crazy with no substances. So
can you do it like at 6:30 in the morning when you wake up to get you going?
That's a great idea. We meet, like I'm part of the Friday night dance, Pollinate Dance Friday, and Dance Spirit, which Dance Spirit happens on Sunday mornings and Wednesday nights. So if you want to do it in a group, I highly recommend it.
That was an interview with my friend Ruthie Oland from Equal Exchange. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. We've been talking about some holiday things around consumerism and gift ideas. It's always good to make things yourself if you're into the gift-giving thing. Maybe things that someone would likely buy and use anyway. Food. I'm all about food. But I have a recipe and directions for partially homemade laundry detergent. No, it's dish liquid, which I'm going to play in a few minutes after all the listeners have time to grab their pencils and paper and copy them down.
Or tablets.
Tablets. Stone tablets. Anyway, this is WXOJLP 103.3 FM Northampton. And streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. I wanted to repeat that statistic from the toy exchange flyer. This is a toy exchange that's happening at Smith Folk on the 13th of December, right, Dwayne? Collections on the 12th and...
Yeah, collections on the 12th and the exchange is on the 13th. What you were looking for is the average U.S. citizen consumes twice as many goods as 50 years ago, and over 90% of the goods produced for U.S. markets find their way into the trash within 6 months. Okay. With these statistics in mind, there is little doubt that both Mother Nature and the entire abandoned and destined for the incinerator cast of Toy Story wholeheartedly support this event.
All right, so as promised, I'm going to play a recipe for homemade dish liquid. Unfortunately, I don't know how to acquire some of the raw ingredients, probably at the hardware store. But at least in general, it's simpler and a lot cheaper than buying detergent fully made. This recipe is from Esther Mason, a family friend in Kentucky who does workshops on self-reliance.
So this is Esther Mason from the Frugal Fridays series at the Bell County Public Library. And today we did clothes washing, but she's also got a recipe here for making some homemade liquid dish soap.
Okay, the way I make it, I triple it by 10 times because I make a huge dish pan full. But I'll give you the short version because that's the recipe I have on hand and it's easy to do. You use 1.5 cups of hot water and you shred your bar soap into it and just bring it to, not a boil, but just melt it over your stove over low heat. Just keep stirring it until the soap melts. Then you take it off of the stove, and you add a tablespoon of vinegar and a tablespoon of the super washing soda. And I like to use the tea tree oil, only a tiny amount, 1/8 teaspoon, but you can use any kind of the oils, the essential oils that you like, but the tea tree oil gives it a little more power to it. And you just stir that up, and I warn you, it takes all day. But you stir it up, but you don't have to stand over it all day. Mm-hmm. What you do is just anytime you come to the kitchen, just give it a stir with your whisk, and I just use my super duper whisk over there.
So you keep it on a really low setting.
Well, you don't even leave it on the stove. You just leave it at room temperature. Just put it over on the counter, and stir it, and just keep stirring, you know, through the course of the day, like 8 hours, but not continuously. You can go on about your business and then come back to it whenever you're in the room and give it a stir. And it just makes a beautiful mixture, and it's just lovely to use. Get your dishes sparkly clean.
That's it.
Put it in a squeeze bottle if you like squeeze bottles, or just however you want to use it out of the bowl or whatever.
All right. What about this increasing the antibacterial qualities?
Yeah, that's why I use the tea tree oil. That's my favorite. But you can use the lemon, the sweet orange, lemongrass, lavender, or eucalyptus.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
That was Esther Mason, a family friend of mine in Kentucky. Let's see, we've been talking about Christmas, well, not necessarily Christmas, but holiday gifts and consumerism stuff. I think one of the pressures that a lot of people feel at this time of year is in their work and their employment situation. There's holiday parties, there's like secret Santa parties, or I don't know what the non-denominational, I guess, is Santa denominational? I don't know. Trash fairy, well, in Federal People, we have trash fairy parties where after the holidays, when we've seen a lot of consumer items go this way and that, we draw names in early December, and then in January we have our holiday party, and we trade the best pickings that we found for our secret trash person.
I wasn't even involved last year, and I got a 10-pound bag of sugar. White sugar.
The dream come true for you. Yeah, and it was dumpstered, and that was great because not only was it free, I mean, you're actually saving something from the landfill. There's a lot of reasons I like to dumpster dive. The main one is that I just don't like to shop because there's so many things to think about when I shop, like, how long will this item last before I need to throw it away? Or where did it come from? Or where is it going to go next? Or do I really need it? Or can I get it from somewhere else? Anyway, dumpster diving is the easy way out. But you got to be careful dumpster diving because sometimes you get products that you don't really want to promote. Like, say I found a pair of Nike shoes and I'm wearing them around. Even though I didn't pay Nike for them, I'm still doing free advertising for them. Democracy Now! Is going to come on at 5. And this has been out there. I've got a closing song. Thanks to Pete Seeger, who's singing it, but the words and the music are by Bill Steele.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it, puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday and carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage, garbage. We're filling up the seas with garbage. What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Garbage, 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 garbage. Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac, winds it down the throughway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. He's joined by lots of smaller cars, all sending gases to the stars, there to form a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days. And the sun licks down into it with an ultraviolet tongue, turns it into smog, and then it settles in our lungs. Oh, garbage, 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 We're filling up the sky with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to breathe but garbage? Getting home and taking off his shoes, he settles with the evening news while the kids do homework with the TV in one ear. While Superman for the thousandth time sells talking dolls and conquers crime, dutifully they learn the date of birth of Paul Revere. In the papers there's a piece about the mayor's middle name. He gets it read in time to watch the All-Star Bingo game. Oh, garbage! We're filling up our minds with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to read and there's nothing left to need? There's nothing left to watch, there's nothing left to touch. There's nothing left to walk upon and nothing left to talk upon. Nothing left to see and nothing left to be but garbage. Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees complete with silver tinsel and a geodesic stand. The plastic's mixed in giant vats from some conglomeration that's been piped from deep within the earth or strip mined from the land. And if you ask them questions, they say, why don't you see? It's absolutely needed for the economy. Oh, garbage. Their stocks and their bonds all garbage. Garbage. What will they do when their system goes to smash? There's no value to their cash, there's no money to be made, but there's a world to be repaid. Their kids will read in history books about financiers and other crooks, and feudalism and slavery, and nukes and all their knavery. To history's dustbin they're consigned, along with many other kinds of garbage.
This has been Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP Northampton, 103.3 FM. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!